on the Street and Curb. I'm your host, Steve Carvelli. We come to you every week at this time where we talk politics, economics, finance, where the rubber meets the road. This is Street and Curb. We're going to take a quick break. We have a full agenda today. And then also later in the show, we're going to talk about the American dream. Does it really exist now? Is it attainable? And if it's attainable, it's attainable for whom? So we're going to be right back and after a couple minutes.
Hi, I'm Connie Britton. I support Feeding America because they help provide over 6 billion meals to people in need each year. Learn more at feedingamerica.org. Feeding America, 200 food banks strong.
Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. I'm your host, Steve Carvelli. We come to you every week at this time where we talk politics, economics, whatever is our fancy for the week. And man, have we had an active news cycle this week. We had an attempted assassination, finger pointing from the assassination. The RNC convention is in process. But I have to comment initially on the internet digital grandstanding that's been happening a lot. And what do I mean by this? Well, a lot of political wannabes who either tweet, post, or digitalize or verbalize inappropriate, confidential, insensitive, confrontational statements. And then they kind of, when they get challenged on it, they retract them, erase them, or delete them. And they do this to get some publicity for themselves and their office. And it's not just national politics politicians are doing this. I've seen state and county. I've seen all levels of government, even some nonprofit, head honchos have been doing these kind of tweets. So they send these inflammatory tweets and then they wait for the backlash. But in the meantime, they got the publicity they wanted. And it's unfortunate because, you know, everyone talks about how we have to police the internet and miscommunication and stuff like that. You shouldn't just be able to retract a tweet that's inflammatory and get the publicity for it and then disappear for a while. But again, that's the sign of the times. There's been a lot of that going on, but with this assassination attempt, I've seen it much more prevalent and prominent lately. One of the other issues I wanted to bring up before we get into our main topic is Joe Biden. You know, he's one of my favorite topics. But there's been a sense of hypocrisy about him that has actually gone to a whole new level. He calls into the morning Joe, the MSNBC talking leftist head show. And what happened was that he calls into them and he wants to talk about why he's frustrated where some Democrats want him removed from the ticket. And he actually quotes, and this is an actual quote from him, "I'm frustrated by the elites of the party. Oh, they know so much more." So these are the same elites, the elites who have the Hamptons fundraisers, the elites who back him, the George Clooney types, the Hollywood types that back him and fund him and give him $40 million in every fundraising campaign, that now he's campaigning against them because he believes that they're part of the elites looking to replace him. So Joe Biden is trying to position himself as the average Joe, not the senile Joe, and the elites are looking to sink his candidacy. I just find that hypocrisy really kind of appalling. And this is going in, he calls into his normal show, The Morning Joe. And it's interesting that this show actually got pulled the Monday after the assassination attempt because the network wanted to preempt them with a network feed. And they got all upset by it because actually, I believe the network executives thought they were going to say something totally inappropriate against Trump, and they didn't want to catch the backlash for it. So it's interesting that the elites that somehow have funded Joe Biden, backed Joe Biden, and made an issue of his campaign now are being targeted by him as kind of the replacement theorist for people in his presidency. It's interesting that the same elites provide Joe Biden with his vacation houses in the Hamptons when they go up there. They pretty much fund the entire campaign. And quite frankly, they have shielded Biden from the security and the inquisition of the press about his capability and cognitive capability. So again, it's interesting. Joe Biden is kind of positioning himself as an average Joe, and he's clearing the path into the average Joe category so he can run for reelection as just one of us. It's really interesting. We kind of have to look into that. And I think the discerning public really has to call people out on this. you know, did Joe Biden take the Hippocratic Oath, or did his wife, the doctor, take the actual oath? So we'll wait and see. When we come back, I want to talk about the American dream. This is something that has been talked about recently, where we stand, how it's workable, how it's attainable. I wanted to find out if you guys are close to getting the American dream. Have you accomplished it? Or is the American dream gone from this country, and maybe overseas is where you should look for the dream? So we're going to take a quick break. When we come right back, it's the American dream conversation.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America.
I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
Go to PVA.org to learn more.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Street and Curb. I'm your host, Steve Carvelli, coming to you every week at this time. And I wanted to hit a topic that a lot of people have come up to me on. There's a lot of conversation on some other newscasts about. It's about the American dream. And, you know, people want to define what it is. How has it changed? Is it attainable? Why is it attainable now? And maybe why it's not attainable now? And is it attainable for everyone? Is this dream a quest for Americans only? Is it uniquely American? Or can you really attain the American dream by maybe living overseas and living with a lower cost of living? Well, before we get into all that, I guess we have to look for what the basis of the American dream is. And I believe that that is couched in the very serious stuff that the founding fathers put in the Declaration of Independence. Basically, all men are created equal, endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among them are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So where does the American dream come into? It comes into the pursuit of happiness. Of course, you need life and liberty. You have to be living. You have to have the freedom to explore opportunity. That's the liberty part, but you have to actually pursue happiness. And I guess, what is the pursuit of happiness? Well, is that the ability to do what you want to do when you want to do it and be able to afford when you want to do it? So if this is the case, the grease for this wheel is money. So the pursuit of happiness is kind of intertwined with the acquisition of money. Everything comes down to the basic economic sense and money, and it's kind of like an issue of quality of work and stuff like that to see where you go. So to make money, again, you need opportunity, and opportunity is something that really gets into a discussion of not only attaining money, but the equality to be able to get the opportunity. So you have to be able to make money. You have to exploit the tools that are education, money, access to money, and mobility to actually leverage yourself to get money. So is opportunity, or the lack of it, have demographics in mind? And there are class constraints on this. So the argument can be made for the access to opportunity, whether there is equality issues, whether people in the inner city have the same opportunities for the people in the suburbs, whether people who are educated have the same opportunity for people or not. And that is a valid point. And I will make the concession to that point that opportunity may come from a lot of issues or lack of it, and there has to be discussion on equality. But I don't want to go down that path today. I want to talk more about the materialistic path and how that impacts society. For instance, opportunity can come from many forms. Is it the child who takes over his family business or inherits a good amount of money from his parents' assets? Entrepreneurs who are risk takers and do so by borrowing money from venture capitals. That's a part of opportunity. That is part of the opportunity to fulfill the opportunity. And I guess when you come to the American dream, most parents say the American dream is basically that the children have a better life and go further than they have. Whether it's money, education, or opportunity, as long as your kids are better off than you are, that is part of the American dream. But according to a recent study, 92% of children born in 1940, so it's not that recent, but they just outlined the study, made more money than their parents. However, in the 1980s, only 50% of the kids were better off than their parents. In 2020, approximately 50% of late Generation Z, Generation X, actually believe that the American dream is attainable. So we've had a tremendous transition from the 1940, 92%, back to 50% that don't even think it's attainable. So it begs the question about the American dream. Is the American dream just the accumulation of wealth, whether you have boats, cars, art, money in the bank, money in stocks, money in family money, money in trust, money in real estate? Is it only materialistic? It bodes well for the capitalist that the American dream is really couched in capitalism. And I think how most people measure their success is by what they have in the bank and how comfortable they live. However, back in the historical times of the founding fathers, back in 1931, James Taylor Adams, which was a entrepreneur and historian, and he states in a book during the middle of the Depression that not a dream of motor cars and high wages merely, but a dream of local order in which each man and each woman shall be able to attain to the fullest stature of which they are innately capable and be recognized by others for what they are, regardless of the fortuitous circumstances of birth or position. So this is really flying in the face of the silver spoon of the American dream. So if you're born into wealth, if you inherit wealth, you shouldn't be, if you don't have that and you really, your dream comprises of material things such as motor cars or just high wages, that is not part of the American dream. For Adams, it's aspiration and drive, but it's also about the result and how it benefits society as a whole. So again, what can supersede the accumulation of wealth? Again, it goes by what you do for society as a whole. So the American dream has a two component. We always talk about the materialistic component, but now there is a societal component. So there's a lot to talk about the American dream, whether it's actually reachable or not reachable, why we may not be able to reach it. But let's take a quick break right now. When we come back, we're talking the dream, the American dream. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Connie Britton. I support Feeding America because they help provide over 6 billion meals to people in need each year. Learn more at feedingamerica.org. Feeding America, 200 food banks strong.
Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb. And today we're talking the American dream. So we've discussed a lot about, you know, if you're a parent, you want your kids to do better. You're basically talking on a materialistic sense. You want them to have more money in the bank, better education. But again, that requires money to get the education. So everything's been focusing on that. So is the pursuit of happiness really the pursuit of the American dream? And the discussion then goes to that, can individuals be happy? Is the country happy? Is the, you know, are happy people really comprise what the American dream is about? There's been an interesting study I read recently that, you know, what are the happy nations in the country? And it's usually Scandinavian countries because maybe they like the socialized government services that provides them everything, or maybe they don't think that paying excess taxes has anything to do with it, or maybe it's the better weather, there's no climate effect. But when you talk about happy nations, it's either the number one, two, or three countries. It's either Denmark, Norway, or Sweden. So again, what can be the possibility for that, and how does that translate to individuals pursuing their own individual dream? So I guess the question is the American dream exportable? Well, maybe it is if it's just a definition of what a happy nation is, but maybe it isn't. So again, it goes to the question, is it relevant today? Every politician who runs for national office always wants to talk about, are you better off than you were before I ran or before I was in office? So they always go back to 4 years. And everyone always measures that as a materialistic response. Do I have more money in the bank? Am I paying less in taxes? Do I own more real estate? Am I happier? Where I'm at in life. And that's always been a dichotomy and a barometer whether we should keep an incumbent in office or kind of sweep the room clean and bring new people in. So I guess when it comes to the American dream, depending on, I guess, the political spectrum you're in, but more importantly, the economic demographic that you're in, I still think it's predominantly a materialistic idea on where you come. There's always the idea what's good for you is, you know, you should do more for what's good for people and culture and society than what's good for you individually, you know, echoing the words of John Kennedy on that aspect. But again, I think when most people look at the American dream and see if it's attainable, it's what I can do for a living and how I can get it. So the Declaration of Independence, Constitution, you know, everyone seems to have the pursuit of happiness, that you should have the liberty to go and do what you want. That is good. The issue is, well, how do you define opportunity and how do you create opportunity? I don't think it's any, there's no mistake about it that money begets money and then money provides you with opportunity to be able to exploit opportunity to do it. So it's a question that we're going to go back into the equality issue, I guess, on these issues about how we can get opportunity for everybody. And also, if the American dream is reached by a good segment of the population, let's say that 70% of grown adults feel that the American dream is attainable and 40% have reached the American dream, what is the percentage really that says that we're a happy nation? Is it a 50% mark? Is it a 70% mark? Does pretty much a great majority of the country have to feel secure economically to say that the American dream is nationwide? So again, we talk about the nation's happiness, the pursuit of happiness, and the pursuit of your individual goals and aspirations. You know, we're going to see a lot of talk about in this presidential cycle about the American dream and how it was born during the founding fathers and how it's evolved now. But I think there's two big important facts about the American dream that people ought to realize. That number one, not all aspects of capitalism are evil. Materialism, to a certain extent, really governs the economy and really moves the economy. And you have to have a desire and aspiration to attain that, to create the opportunity to make more money. On the flip side, Mr. Adams is a little bit correct. There has to be a general good. There has to be a general consensus that if we pull everyone's happiness together, can we somehow make a happy nation? And equality issues are going to come in. Limited opportunity aspects are going to come in. And this is going to be something that's really going to, I don't want to say preoccupy our election cycle this year, but it is going to be a primary point of contention. And depending on what side of the aisle you're on, you're going to have certain people saying the opportunity is not there for certain people. So therefore, as a nation, we are not a happy nation or a nation that the American dream is attainable. On the flip side of that, you're going to say the opportunity is there for certain people. You're going to hear feel-good stories. Hey, I came up from nothing. I came from over, you know, my parents came into this country with $50 in their pocket, and they made a business empire that I inherited. So there is going to be some kind of flip side to that. But I think there is a, for lack of a better word, a happy medium. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to see where the happy medium is, and then see if maybe we can make the dream attainable for more people. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
The joy of living is in the giving.
Hello there, this is Nat King Cole, wishing you all a happy and a Merry Christmas, and asking that you remember our less fortunate children by giving Toys for Tots.
Hi, I'm Vivica Fox. Every year, millions of animals lose their homes and end up in shelters. Learn how to help animals in need of rescue and adoption at AmericanHumane.org and be a hero to our best friends in their worst times.
We are there in your community. Small business owners, mechanics, police officers, homemakers. And we are there serving our nation in the Air Force Reserve. When medical emergencies arise, we meet the challenge. In cybersecurity, protecting and defending in cyberspace. When natural disasters happen, we are there in space. As a strong part of the nation's defense, we are there in the community and we are there for our nation. We share a vision to make a difference, united and focused, taking pride in being there in service of our country. We are Reserve Citizen Airmen. And we are there with over 180 different jobs to serve your country. Air Force Reserve. Go to afreserve.com for more information.
First Responders Children's Foundation takes care of the children and families the brave ones leave at home. Help us help them. These are the beautiful voices of police officers, firefighters, nurses, and teenagers who remind us that we can come together and create harmony and unity.
Hallelujah.
BRAVE to 24365 to learn how you can help your first responder community today.
Welcome back, everyone, to Street and Curb, and I'm your host, Steve Carvelli. Today, we're talking the American dream. How is it attainable? And we talked a little bit about the last segment. Is there a happy medium? I know we like the term happy today, but is there a happy medium between, you know, acquiring the American dream through a materialistic sense and then maintaining the American dream by creating something to benefit society as a whole? And I think there is a happy medium. For instance, material wealth does help other people because that's just how philanthropy started. So all the big medical wings that are donated by rich people, all the nonprofits that are funded by rich people, the trust, the foundations, the Gates Foundation, again, all funded by super wealthy people who have shared the wealth, shared the opportunity. They have attained the American dream, I guess, by any stretch of the imagination or stretch of the definition of the term. They have attained the American dream, but continue to put money back into society as a way of helping it. So there is a component that super wealthy people do have to help the American dream go on. But on a practical level, how does that work for you and I who have to pay bills, have kids maybe in college, have mortgages to pay, rent to pay? You know, if we join the Peace Corps and do that full time, you know, we're not really supporting a family of four in a suburban $800,000 house and paying our bills with that. So it seems to be a hard fork in the road, whether we go the, you know, help society route or we help ourselves route. But I think there are some middle ground practical applications. And I've heard this a lot recently, and it comes back to a basic concept of how, organized churches collect tithes and how they view people, how they should view society, is that a portion of the day or a portion of your income should go to create opportunity whose benefit is not to you. So it's not a benefit to you. Now, you know, if you donate to a nonprofit, you get a tax write-off. That is a benefit. But they're talking about creating opportunity that has no benefit. So that means volunteering time in an afternoon at a learning annex to teach a course about people, how they can start a business or do something like that, helping veterans that create no opportunity, no tax write-off, no tax deduction. You're taking up time on your Saturday mornings to do that kind of course. And that is creating opportunity for others. But also there's opportunity by you making a donation that may not affect you. You may not take the tax write-off. You may not give them that. You may give a church a piece of property and not take the tax write-off, or contribute building supplies for rehabbing properties and not worrying about the write-off. So there are practical solutions that do that. But the important part about it is that I think happiness is a balance. When you look at the American dream, it's a balance of what you acquire in life and what you do after you acquire the stuff in life. It always goes to amaze me, the individual who won the multi-billion dollar lottery, and how the news, he was just in the news the other day that he bought another big building. He buys a $25 million compound in Los Angeles. He buys another $50 million compound. And I think that it just goes to show you how, the ability for this gentleman, what he could have done with that type of money. He took a lump sum money of like $690 million. And what he could have done with that, he could probably funded schools. He could probably funded wings of hospitals. He could have probably funded some pretty big foundations on creating educational opportunities for underadvantaged kids and individuals. But they focused on the material things. And I think the press is a little bit guilty of this, of creating this materialistic aura about the American dream. And I think when it comes down to the other side about what we can do for society and how we can benefit society a little bit, that it comes from an individual level. And this comes from a level that you have to create and find within yourself to discipline yourself to create that. So I guess I'm saying the American dream is a work in progress. It is not something that once you attain it, you stop attaining it and you stop trying to maintain it. There is a societal component to it that requires you to spend some time and effort to create a better society for some other people. And that requires effort, and that requires maintaining the components and the individual traits that you have to get the American dream in the first place. So I guess an answer to my question is the American dream is attainable. It is reachable. It has been reached by a lot of people, but it is not complete. It's like a dream that you wake up in the middle of it and you wonder what the back end of the story is, and you try to go back to sleep and you can never find out what the ending is. It's not a nightmare, as some people would play it. That is, you know, the American dream is actually rolled into a nightmare at this point. It is not. It is a work in progress. It's a dream in progress that we should see to its completion and understand that there are two balances to the dream. And I think that's what's missing with a lot of politicians today. It's certainly missing with the press. And it's certainly not understand by a lot of people who understand that the American dream is just a materialistic component. So again, we're going to see a lot of this in politics today. We're going to see a lot of people play on the American dream. Both conventions are going to make this as a theme point. They're going to ask you, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And you're going to ask, you know, your parents are going to want to strive that you're better off than them. You know, you make sure your children are better off and proceed further than you do. And that is how progression is done. If everyone's better off than the generation before them, this is how society builds buildings. This is how society creates and maintains institutions and foundations. This is how we progress. It is on the backs of other people who come before us, and it is on the money from other people who come before us. So wealth that is passed down from generation to generation may not be eyed as the true entrepreneur, but it does have a fact and it does have a benefit in our life. So again, I have a, you know, we're joining you next week at Street and Curb. And I want you guys to remember, for Street and Curb, before you jump off the curb, look to the left, look to the right before you cross the street. And we'll see you here next week. Same time, same channel, and same host. And we'll see you next week for Street and Curb.